Hello.
Hola.
Welcome back to Devil and Debney, the podcast. The podcast where we discuss and review new movie releases. Welcome back.
Releases.
I always have to say it like this.
Always.
In the podcast. And I also have to say podcast.
Who knows why?
I don't know.
Some questions are better left unanswered.
I think that one's one we should just let it lie. Let it die.
Let it die.
Intros for the podcast. I always say these, but I'm going to say them anyways. Be prepared for lots of spoilers. We're going to talk about the entire movie. If you want to watch it first and then come back so you're not spoiled, go. Please do it. Enjoy it. But remember that we are here waiting for you to come back for us. So, and that's also true. Follow us on Letterboxd, DI_podcast. We post the movies there before we talk about them.
Not after, before.
I try my best to do it on Wednesdays, but a lot of times it happens on Thursdays and Fridays because I am a forgetful person. Because like the podcast, I set it up on a timer, so it like uploads on a certain time, but like with the letterbox, you have to like physically do it. You can't time it. So yeah, whatever. I'm trying to get Jonathan to take over the letterbox and lead it.
It sounds rather complicated.
You literally use letterbox all the time.
I know, that's true.
You're crazy. Okay, so first segment of the podcast, what are we watching right now?
We watched the last two Mission Impossibles. We watched Fallout and Rogue Nation.
Yes, just because we watched Mission Impossible for this review, for some reason we just like wanted to watch all of them.
We're just in a binge, so now we're going in reverse order.
Yeah, we're going in reverse order, but we've only done those two, the prior ones. Is Ghost Protocol next?
Yeah.
That one's my favorite. My fave. Do you have a fave? If you had to pick one? I think I saw that with my dad in theaters, and there was just something about the moment where the man is literally climbing up the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, what is this? Because, it's like real, and they shot it on like IMAX cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, oh, it's so cool watching the behind the scenes. Like Tom Cruise, that is my favorite stunt he's done in all of the Mission Impossible movies.
I know he's done some
pretty badass stuff, like holding onto an airplane and like driving a motorcycle off a cliff and everything, but come on, I think that's pretty awesome.
I think it's pretty
like they
amazing.
Literally shot it on the building too, right?
Yeah.
What? That's so cool. I think that's like why these movies have stayed so relevant. Because like, I mean, there's James Bond, which is like similar, but we were talking about this. What were you gonna say?
It's just a different kind of movie than James Bond, you know?
Oh yeah, it's like it's very different, but it's the same kind of thing. Like super spies doing impossible missions, but the quality is just so good. Like if Tom Cruise makes a movie, you know it's for the people and that the people will love it, you know? Like I feel like
for The Mummy.
I don't know what The Mummy is.
Anyway, sorry.
Is it an older movie of his?
No, he made it like 2017 and it bombed real hard.
Really?
Anyway, yeah.
I never even heard of it.
It was supposed to start this whole like monster universe with Universal, but it bombed, so they scrapped it.
Oh, well, anyway. I'm sorry.
I know, yeah.
But did he act
in it? I haven't seen
it.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Well, I never heard of it, but whatever, I guess, never mind. You made me feel really stupid. I feel like Tom Cruise makes movies for the people. Like
he
knows what
does.
People want.
Yeah, he's an expert at that, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Like they want some action, they want some cool guy lines where you sound like a badass. They want moments when he's like, what? I have to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
And, like his jokes are always like just like a moment like in the middle of combat where they're like, what?
What?
But somehow it's so funny. Like those are literally the jokes. So I think that they're wonderful movies.
I think my favorite is it's Fallout or Ghost Protocol, I think.
My favorite's just Ghost Protocol.
Protocol.
Fallout was okay, but I also wasn't paying attention to it. I was doing crafting.
You were crafting.
Mm-hmm.
Crafty.
But we also went to the local like historic theater here, and they were playing A League of Their Own, which I love. I think it's a classic. It's Tom Hanks.
I liked it more this time than
it's
I thought.
It's so good. Why did he was like so opposed to seeing it, and I wanted to see it so bad because it was we were either going to be able to see that or we were going to be able to see the Top Gun Maverick, which I really wanted to see. But we had a time conflict, so we ended up having to see A League of Their Own, which I wanted to see that anyways, so I was happy about it. But Jonathan was very upset when I tried to make him watch it.
I wasn't that upset.
Yeah.
I was like,
did you have
it.
A good time? The movie was full. There were a lot of people there. It was all old people bringing their like granddaughters.
Legit, yeah.
It was what it was, but it was super cute.
I liked it more the second time around. for sure.
How old were you when you saw it the first time?
Oh, this I was probably like 2-3 years ago.
Oh, I was about to be like, oh, you were probably just like a young guy.
No.
I guess your taste didn't really mature until recently.
Taste maturity requires a certain age.
What is it? Is it different for men and female?
Probably.
Nothing more? I thought you were going to tell me the age where you matured. What age did you mature?
Oh, like 7.
Never mind. Okay, Jonathan, do you want to intro the movie?
Yeah. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1.
When I saw that, I was like, what? Because this is a 2 hour and 50 minute movie, right? And it's part 1.
It's very risky, but honestly, go into that mindset saying it's a part 1. Kind of like...
Well, was the second movie not already approved?
No. I'm just saying that's always a risky...
Because if people don't like it.
Yeah, if people don't like it, then they're not going to really look forward to part 2. They knew people were going to
like it,
though. Yeah.
It's like the exact like formula for every Mission Impossible movie.
That's true. This is directed by, do you know who?
Tom? I don't know.
Christopher McQuarrie.
Why would I know that?
He did Fallout and Rogue Nation.
How would I know that?
And he did Jack Reacher, which also had Tom Cruise in it. He did Edge of Tomorrow, which had Tom Cruise in it. Yeah. He helped write Top Gun Maverick, Edge of Tomorrow, and The Usual Suspects, which he won an Academy Award for, amongst other writers.
Amongst.
It's a good movie.
So he's done a couple things.
He's done some stuff.
People know him.
People know me. This movie stars, this is a long list, bear with me. Tom is Ethan Hunt. Simon Pegg
as his last name.
Yeah, don't. Simon Pegg is Benji. Vig Rames as Luther. Haley Atwell as Grace. And I haven't seen her act in a movie in a while. Well, except Doctor Strange, the second one, but that was terrible. Rebecca Ferguson as Ilsa Faust. It's a cool last name. Faust.
I thought we were going to say Ferguson, and I was just thinking, like, of course, New Girl.
New Girl. Vanessa Kirby as the White Widow. I think Asai Morales as Gabriel. Pom Klementieff as Paris. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
You're probably not.
I think I am. Maybe. Henry Czerny. I don't know how to pronounce that. Czerny as Kittredge. And Carrie Ells as Dellinger. Do you know who he was in? What he was in? Excuse me.
Who was he in? Jonathan. This is not an R-rated podcast. I don't know.
Maybe he's the bad... He's...
He's the...
Do you know who I'm talking about? Dellinger?
Yes.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
He was the guy on the train who, like, you were like, what?
Yeah.
I thought you
yeah.
were a good guy, but mm-hmm. you're not.
He's the good guy in The Princess Bride.
There's a couple good guys in Princess
the
Bride.
The main guy with the blonde hair.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I knew that.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Wow. Now that you said that, it's like all coming back to me.
I knew that'd blow your mind.
Oh my gosh. I love him. I don't even care that he was a bad guy. His character, 10 out of 10.
The plot? Pretty simple from IMDb. Ethan Hunt and his IMF team must track down a dangerous weapon before it falls into the wrong hands.
Oh, baby.
Guess what the budget was?
$175 million.
$230. $290.
Why is everything trying to crack that $300 million mark?
So it was... the frequent delays caused by COVID-19 expanded the budget to $291 million, making it the most expensive Mission Impossible film and the most expensive Tom Cruise film.
Do we just think everything's getting more expensive because of inflation or something? Because I don't understand why. I feel like every movie we talk about is like $200 and something million.
Well, that's because most of the movies we see, not most, some of the movies we see are blockbusters.
Jonathan's like, I have high standards. I only see movies over $250.
I only see movies that are made with $10,000. That's the
with
limit.
With $10,000?
Yeah, very indie. It's very cool.
You literally wouldn't be paying anybody anything. Like, have a piece of gum for your payment. Beans is wandering around.
What do you think it's gotten in the box office so far?
I'm gonna guess 100 million.
235 so far.
What? And I actually wanted to see it again. Yeah, I guess I didn't know why they're making so much money. I need to start making a formula for this. Like, if I want to see it twice, it's got to be at least 250 million. You know, if it's that good.
But would you want to see, I'm trying to think of another movie that you'd want to see twice. That's like, would you want to see No Hard Feelings twice? I guess I wouldn't.
Actually, yes, I would.
Yeah, see, that formula doesn't work for everything, you know?
But how do you know it's not going to make 250? Okay, how many stars?
4.5.
Samesies! Go team! High five! Yeah, 10 out of 10. Well, actually,
9 out of 10.
More than 9 out of 10. Okay, so are you ready to get into the notes?
Yeah.
Okay. First off, thank you, Wikipedia, for helping me remember the plot, because I'm really bad at that. So thanks. Appreciate you. You're the best, home dog. You know, since growing up, I was told never to use Wikipedia. It is now the most used source that I have.
That's true.
Because I don't do research at work. Everything I do at work is on work systems. So, like, the only real research I do is on Wikipedia for the podcast.
They should be paying us to sponsor them.
They should. We should be sponsored by Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Okay. So the movie starts out in a Russian submarine called Sevastopol that is supposed to be invisible to every radar system and detection system under the sun. So it has...
Under the sun?
You've never heard of that?
I've never heard of that phrase.
Yeah, it's like everything under the sun.
Oh.
Like everything in the world.
What do I know?
Wait till it's like not a saying and I'm just like an idiot or something, or I said it wrong and it's everything under the moon or something. But it has officially, because they told us this, they very much handed you all this information at the start. It has evaded every great nation and it is now going home because it has achieved everything it's wanted to by deceiving everybody in the world. Until all of a sudden, another ship pops up and they're like, what the heck's going on? It's on the radar. It's following us, which means it knows where we are. And of course they are shocked. I would be shocked too if I was a part of a submarine that had an invisible to detection systems system and somehow somebody found me. You know, that'd be really scary.
That would suck.
Yeah. So I just want to say right now, interlude, I predicted this next part because I'm a genius. And
that's
I
true,
even
you
told
did.
You it.
Yeah.
So
I can confirm.
They fire a missile at it and all of a sudden it disappears and they're like, oh my gosh, it was a glitch. But then all of a sudden the missile starts coming back and the missile hits them and they all die. And this is what I was thinking the whole time, because I was like, they cannot prove that there is a ship there. All they can do is look at the radar, but they can't look out the window. There's no windows on the submarine. So they're just taking the radar's word that there's a ship there. And I was like, there's not a ship there. They're being hacked. I knew it.
But there are no windows on any submarines because it wouldn't be possible.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Well, actually,
you can't verify it because there's no windows. So how do they truly know the radar is working?
That's true. You can't always trust radar.
Yeah.
Computer systems, AI.
None of it. Going
chat,
off the grid.
GBT.
Going off the grid, but I'm keeping the podcast. So that was kind of like their little intro. And what turns out happened was, is there was a powerful AI thing. I don't know what else you would call it.
System.
That was aboard of the ship for some reason. And my main question was, is like, how does AI work? I know nothing about it. I am an idiot. I know nothing about AI. All I know is you can type in questions and it does magic. but I guess, what is like an AI's home? Like,
it has no...
Is it a server? If it's powerful enough, can it like surf the web through different servers?
Well,
like,
yeah, they're
it's written code, right?
But the server was in the submarine.
Yeah, but the submarine sank.
Yeah, but the server is still
there. So how
does
the AI not like die because it's infiltrated with water?
Maybe the room didn't burst.
It's a submarine. You should tell me you can't have windows, but that AI wouldn't get wet when it got shot by a missile.
I don't know, maybe, but it found its way. It found its way out.
Another question. The AI infiltrated the submarine to take it down, but it's housed on the submarine. So if you take down the submarine, you're going to die. Unless they wanted to be free from the control of the Russians or something, because the Russians had the key.
Doesn't everybody want to be free of the Russians?
You don't even know any Russians.
I used to.
So they cut to the IMF headquarters. and there is a group of, you know, high up people in the U.S.
intelligence community
where there are officials of various agencies, importance, you know, just lots of important people in the room. And they're talking about the artificial intelligence. They're calling it the entity. And the AI thing is what the entity is what they're talking about. So I didn't like this scene because it's legit a group of 20 people who are somehow each saying one line cohesively, one after the other, that is perfectly explaining how the entity works and how it's going to destroy the world.
It's just an exposition dump. That's what it is.
It was an exposition dump, but like in such an annoying way. Like at least you could have made it like a presentation and there were like a couple people doing it or something. But instead it was just like a group of random people who like just have a cameo in the movie and have one line. And I'm like, you just wanted to be in the Mission Impossible movie. Like, it have one line. Like, it was annoying to me.
Yeah, it's probably my biggest gripe with the movies, that scene overall.
Yeah, I just thought that scene was, like, kind of annoying. Like, I get it. The movies aren't believable, but they're believable enough that, like, you enjoy it. And that was just, like, it was too much.
Yes.
Like, yeah. It was too forced, and I just didn't like it.
Too forced. Also, I said this in the movie, but I usually don't like Dutch angles, but I was...
Oh my God, I forgot about this.
I was loving it in this
movie.
There
were so many Dutch angles, and I hated it. I was like, this is ridiculous. There's not even any symbolism to it. Like, I get it when there's symbolism, but in this instance, it was literally just like, it looked like they set the camera up wrong.
I liked it. It was harkened back to the first movie.
Okay, if it's a reference to the first movie, then I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... you find out in this expose scene that they originally designed the AI system to sabotage digital systems, and then the entity went rogue and it became its own thinking self, and it infiltrated all of the military defense systems, intelligence networks in the world, and it left little Easter eggs just to show everybody that it could take over if it wanted to. And so then various world powers are now racing against the clock to get the key that controls the AI, but you don't actually know where the key goes and you don't know how it controls the AI. You just know that you need to have the key to control it.
Yeah.
So.
Yawning time.
It was kind of an interesting idea to me, the fact that they were like, oh, this AI is completely self-controlled and completely its own conscious being, but we have this little plastic key and it controls him. Like, I don't get that. I guess it was the failsafe, but don't you think that the entity would be powerful enough to break its own failsafe? If it can break into like all of the military networks in the world?
Maybe. Hopefully.
I wonder if that's going to be the plot twist in the next movie, is that it actually, like, the key actually doesn't work.
Well, that's true, because the key didn't work at the beginning of the movie, right?
I don't know what they were trying to do, but at the beginning of the movie, they put the key in something and they turned it.
I know. I don't remember what they tried to do, but it was green and then it turned red right afterwards, I think.
And I don't know what that meant. Yeah. Maybe they were trying to turn it off because they were like done doing whatever they were doing or something with it.
I don't fully understand it either. Hopefully,
whenever we make a
machine like that, we'll put a failsafe into it so that we can stop it when it takes over.
We'll have to just wait and see. It's probably going to be a couple months and then we'll experience it.
Hopefully in a couple months. I think in...
Well, we're at a point where AI is powerful enough that people talk about it all the time. And it's like exponential growth curve with it. So I think it'll be pretty soon.
Mucho power.
Yep. Okay. So it's interesting when they're talking about how the entity can break into every system in the world, they show like 1,000 people like in this big warehouse just like typing away on little typewriters. And yeah, it's because they're like making hard copies of all the world's history and all of their important documents in order to preserve it, because technically the entity could go in and like alter all of it if it wanted to and like change the course of history.
I thought that was cool. I kind of
I wouldn't have even thought of that. I liked it too. I was just wondering, like, who all the, like, cast was that they, like, okay, we just need to sit here and, like,
type random.
I wonder what they were typing at their computer, you know what I mean? What's it that he types in The Shining?
Oh, God, it's like...
something about being a good boy.
Oh, I don't remember.
But if I had been at one, I would have looked that up and I would have been typing that away.
You would have been
typing that. It's really funny. Okay. So, of course, everybody wants control of the entity. They want the key. They want all the power. I got the power.
To take a shower.
Is that the lyric?
No.
So, believing that the entity possesses way too much power for humanity, Ethan decides that he is going to destroy it instead of giving the key back to his boss. He tells him that in a very fantastical manner. Watch the movie to find out if you'd like to know.
Fantastical.
And of course, in order to do so, he must go rogue. I know, jaw drop. Who would believe Ethan would go rogue?
Pretty much goes rogue in every movie.
It's almost annoying that he goes rogue in every movie. His own, like, agency is trying to hunt him down. I'm like, he's literally on the impossible mission force. Like, he's gonna have to do some crazy crap to get his work done.
I think he's proven his worth now.
I know, it's just so funny. Like, all of these movies, every single time they're like, no, he's gone rogue, and they're working against him. And every single time he's right. Like, maybe they should learn their lesson that Ethan's probably right.
Ethan's right.
I just thought it was so funny. So Ethan, of course, his classic teammates Benji and Luther are going to, let's see, Abu Dhabi, just the airport though, just the airport, to intercept somebody that they know has the other half of the key. So Ethan tries to get the key. They do some cool facial recognition stuff. Benji diffuses a bomb. They introduce the entity's henchman, Gabriel, yada, 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 yee. To be honest, I really liked this thing. I thought it was really cool.
Me too.
I really enjoyed it. It's very complex, so I kind of just threw the tidbits at you of what happens.
Yeah, I'm
kind of
glad you just threw the tidbits, because that would be very difficult
to explain. It
would have
taken so long to go through that. And also, he mates a woman named Grace. Very beautiful, very graceful, as Graces usually are. And she is a pickpocket who also is looking for the key because she wants to sell it to a buyer.
To get moolah.
Yeah. But she helps Ethan for a little bit, but she flies solo, so she escapes to Rome, and she got the key, but she gets arrested in Rome.
Fun fact.
Ooh.
Tom insisted on performing the magic trick with the two halves of the key practically, you know, when he's first meets Grace, and he's got the key, and then he like flips it out of his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had assumed it was real, because you see magicians do stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, despite numerous failed takes, the desired effect was ultimately achieved in camera with little to no visual effects.
Little to no? Is it little or no?
Little to no, so barely any. I don't know how much
that
means.
But when you say
though,
little to no, like, I thought he wanted none. What visual effects did he need? Did they just want it to, like, glisten? Did they want his teeth to kind of, like, ding
Shing.
When he smiled?
They probably just realigned his teeth so that it's actually
in the middle
center of his face.
I know. I feel bad, but I think that every time I see him.
I know. I don't know. Just what IMDb said.
He's got a great smile, though. Great smile.
$1 million
Despite
smile.
All of the terrible things. His life. I don't know anything about his life.
Also crazy that the opening credits don't appear until 28 minutes into the film.
Oh my gosh, I want to talk about the opening credits. It's too much. It was too much. I was overwhelmed. I know they usually do like a little slideshow of everything that's gonna happen in the movie, but this was like this was sensory overload.
It was
like, I feel like there should be like an epilepsy warning at the beginning of this movie because it was so flashy. It was so bad.
The flashier the better.
I don't know. I was like really overwhelmed. You weren't overwhelmed?
I thought it was a little too much, maybe, but I mean, I was fine with it. What? Being honest.
You just look at a screen all day. You're so used to it.
Pretty much.
Okay, so.
It's my work.
They all go to Rome because that's where Grace is. Grace has the key, yada, yada, yada. She was arrested, but Ethan gets her out. Gabriel's on his way after a very lengthy chase scene.
Wait, we got introduced Paris.
I really honestly just excluded her from all of the...
She was like so badass. I loved her.
Okay, Paris was great.
She was so cool.
But she had such a small part that I did not include her in the discussion. But I loved her character 10 out of 10. I think she was
great. The costume design, perfect.
She was pretty cool. Yeah. She was awesome. Yeah. So she was there too. I'm so sorry, Paris, that I didn't talk about you. But back to the chasing in Rome. I'm not going to lie. For a second, I couldn't tell if I was watching Fast X or if I was watching...
It's in the same...
Mission Impossible. Because it's literally the exact same stairwell and everything they smash through.
What's up with Rome this year, man? Just getting screwed over.
I know. Also, they legit go through all the trouble during this scene to get out of the car that they're in and get into a new car. So that they can hide from the cops. But the second they get in a new car, they run a red light, get caught on the camera, and they're being chased again. I'm like, what was the point? They just wanted them to get into this dinky little Fiat because it was funny. Why couldn't they just get into that car initially? Why'd they have to get into a cop car? I was just kind of like, why was that necessary?
I don't know.
Like, they literally, it was just so stupid. I was like, you wasted all this time getting a new car. You get caught again in that car. Well, then get yourself another car if that's your plan, your action plan every time you get caught. But instead, they're just like dinking around.
Whatever. Dinky dink.
I thought it was kind of weird.
I think it's impressive that Tom Cruise actually drove that car with one hand, with his other hand handcuffed to her.
You like, just have to assume everything in these movies are real.
Driving is practical, and he did that.
He sounds like he's your hero.
Maybe.
Who do you want to be when you grow up?
I don't know.
I thought you were gonna say Tom Cruise. That's why I asked.
Oh, well, that was awkward.
I know.
Why can't I just be myself, Emmy? Is that not enough?
Stop. Never. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so, of course, at the end of the chase scene, Grace escapes again. Psh, women, typical. Always running away from their problems.
No, always.
Ethan and Ilsa infiltrate a party in Venice, hoping to find Grace's buyer and figure out what the darn key unlocks.
Bye.
What are you singing?
The Backstreet Boys.
Why are you singing that?
I don't know. So you said bye.
Also, the way that you said it.
Bye.
That's not how the song goes.
How's it go?
You literally went like, you go like, bye.
It sounds right in my head, okay?
It's bye, baby, bye. No.
That was just worth it, me bringing it up.
It was funny because you go, bye. The way that you did it was funny. Okay, so... Benji and Luther helping Ethan and Ilsa to infiltrate a party in Venice, hoping to find Grace's buyer. Is that why you said bye?
Yes.
And figure out what the darn key unlocks. So at the party, Grace encounters Gabriel, and she learns about the White Widow. When I was typing this, accidentally wrote the Wide Widow. but it turns out the White Widow is the person who had hired Ilsa to get the key. Ethan tries to stop the White Widow from selling the key to the bad people, but she's like,
I like money.
Yeah, I like money.
Money, so, please.
Money, please. Gabriel basically tells the group that the entity has infiltrated the party and determined that one of Ethan's gal pals, either Ilsa or Grace, is gonna die that night. So... then, of course, they scatter. They scram. He goes, scram. And they run. Everybody runs in different directions.
Go team.
And, of course, Grace and Ilsa both try to kill Gabriel. Ilsa sadly passes. She's no longer with us. And so then Grace feels bad about it. So she joins the IMF.
Pretty much. They just replaced one woman with another. But yeah, also, I did see your death coming.
Why?
I don't know. I just kind of thought, like...
Well, are you saying she's too old to be the beauty icon in the IMF movies?
No, not at all. I'm just saying I just kind of saw that coming.
Okay, so the plan now that everything's gone to crap, Ilsa's died, is that they are going to get on a train. They're going to get the key, and it's going to be easy
lemon
breezy.
Squeezy.
So Grace has a mask. She's going to pretend to be the White Widow. Of course, Ethan, being Ethan, decides to drive off of a cliff and then fly to the train. That's what I would do as well.
Well, he misses the train on the first time, so he's just driving up this mountain. He's like, Benji, where am I going?
Thank you for that context. You really cleared it up.
Yeah, I thought
the air.
I thought it was contributing.
Very contextual.
Great contribution.
Do you have any fun facts for us?
Tom Cruise and Ving, I don't know if it's Ving or Vig, or Ving Rhames are the only actors to appear in all 7 films in this series. Simon Pegg joined since the 3rd one, and Rebecca Ferguson joined since the 5th.
Well, Rebecca's dead now, so. But I wouldn't be surprised if she's not dead.
No, I would like to think they keep her dead.
Think she's dead or just dead?
I think she's like dead. I think Fast and Furious, if you're dead, then you come back to life. If you die twice, then you got one more chance.
So you could come back 3 times?
Yeah, I think that's the limit in Fast and Furious movies.
Is that the limit, or is that just as far as they've gone?
Who knows what the limit is? The sky.
Have you seen somebody come back after dying a 4th time?
No, I haven't.
Then you can't say, have no idea what the true limit is.
That's true. I liked that everything in this movie, not this movie, but the end of the movie, it wasn't a giant cliffhanger like Fast X was, you know?
I haven't gotten to the end yet.
Oh, I thought we were at the end.
No, I'm not done yet.
Well,
I just said they're going to get on. They just got on the train, Jonathan. Zip it. Hold that thought. Suck it back in. Back to what I was saying. So, Gabe is on the plane. Gabriel, when I say Gabe. Gabriel. He's not on the plane. He's on the train.
He is a Gabriel.
He's on the train. It is not a plane. It's a train. He is there. He sets the train to be unstoppable. Nobody could stop it.
He kills the workers and takes out the brakes.
Yes, thank you so much for the context. You're just, am I not doing good enough? Am I not doing a good job?
Just pulling where you're
so
lacking.
So Luther then is not on the train. He's busy doing other things. But turns out that the important people of the IMF are actually there, and they want to buddy up with Gabriel and the entity, and he wants to be a bad guy, basically. And he knows where the key goes, but nobody else knows where the key goes. And he tells Gabe that it's actually on the submarine from the beginning of the movie.
Sevastopol, which is a city in Russia.
Mm-hmm. And as Gabe is Gabe, he kills him.
Pretty brutally with a knife.
Yeah, very aggressively with a knife, because he doesn't want anybody to know where the key goes. So then during this, Grace is impersonating the White Widow, and she's meeting up with the buyer, who, surprise, is another IMF guy who's turned bad, and she is tempted to betray Ethan.
He's really turned bad, no.
Why is he buying the key?
Because he doesn't want it in the wrong hands, or he wants the power. Either way.
So,
I wouldn't say he's necessarily bad. I think he's more in the gray area.
I had just thought that Ilsa was going to sell the key to Gabriel.
White Widow, you mean?
I'm sorry. I thought that the White Widow was going to sell the key to Gabriel, but then she ended up selling it to the other guy, which I didn't understand. Was the other guy working with Gabriel?
No.
Gabriel
was never the buyer.
But she made it seem like she was going to sell it to Gabriel. So Gabriel was just there, and he was uninvited, is what you're saying. Or he was never invited.
Well, yeah. Right, because
so embarrassing.
They just got on the train for other methods. The woman, Paris, just jumped, and then Gabriel did something else and hopped on the train.
I don't know. I guess I just had assumed that Gabriel was gonna buy it from her, but then she ended up going to sell it to this other guy. I don't know. Potato, potato. But she sells him the key, but then of course everybody figures it out that she wasn't actually the White Widow, and she's in some deep doo doo. So then Ethan and Gabriel fight on top of the train. You just got to have a fight on top of a train in any of these movies. That's just the way it's got
to
go.
And harken back to the first movie when the final battle was on the train.
It's obviously a reference to the Polar Express, the OG Walk on the Top of a Train movie. So Ethan overpowers Gabriel, but Gabe escapes. And he also blows up the bridge that's in front of the train. So, you know, that's not a good situation. But Ethan and Grace save the day by detaching the front pieces of the train so that everybody's not going to die. And also, Ethan has the key because he pickpocketed Gabe. So, that's the end. I'm done. What were you going to say earlier? You had a comment you wanted to make?
Yeah, it didn't end on too much of a cliffhanger, you know? Like, they resolved everything.
They did. In like, this you, movie. It was more just like they have unfinished business.
Yeah.
Instead of like a cliffhanger. Honestly, I don't even like comparing this to Fast X because Fast X is such a trash movie.
It's not even in the same caliber.
Like, it's not in the same caliber at all.
It's just crazy what, like some directors can achieve with, like, $325 million was Fast X, and then a little bit less, and a director can do that, this movie with that amount of money instead. You know what I mean? Like,
it's all about the team and like the people truly knowing what they're doing versus like throwing money at the wall.
Yeah.
The Fast X movies just throw money at the wall. They're like, oh, this would be cool, make it blow up. And then with like the Mission Impossible movies, they're like, how can we really like test?
How can we make this as realistic as possible?
Yeah, and then like, what's something outrageous that we can actually do? Whereas like the Fast X, like, what's the most outrageous thing you've ever heard of?
And then we'll just throw it on a screen.
Mm-hmm. And then make sure there's a car.
Make sure the VFX artists aren't paid very well either.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So the VFX looks like shit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes.
But yeah, the fight scene on top of the train, that was all real.
What? They were actually on top of a train?
Yeah. I'm not sure about the tunnel part. I doubt the tunnel part.
That part was really overwhelming. That was the most overwhelming tunnel scene. And I mean, I've seen a lot of them because they do this in a million movies. There's, if you're fighting on top of a train, there will be a tunnel.
There will be a tunnel where you got to duck down.
Yeah.
It's the law.
They should fight on a train like in South Dakota. There's no hills here. There's probably no tunnels.
Why would they be in? Well, I guess there's nuclear weapons here. So maybe that's why.
There are?
In the silos, yeah.
How do you know that?
The U.S. government definitely has at least one nuclear weapon in South Dakota.
How do you know that?
That I am positive of.
How do you know? I don't care that you're positive. Tell me how you know.
It just makes sense. What about North Dakota? All the storage? Probably North Dakota, too. Where do you think they keep all of our...
It's just weird to think, like, I just kind of assume these, like, in, you know, government agencies in the movies are just, like, not real.
They will.
Okay, Jonathan, what movie do you want to do next week on the podcast?
Barbosa. Operation Barbosa.
Okay, next week we're gonna watch Barbie. Bye.
Bye.